Right, well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for coming along. I have with me, obviously, Kira Mallard and Peter Dunn, but also Peter Bushnell, Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, and Robin Oliver, who's Head of Policy for IRD, who may assist with any of the more technical questions. And I nearly lost a member of my staff there to start the budget off. Budget 2007 is a bold budget. Savings and investing are the centrepieces of Budget 2007, helping drive the Labor-led government strategy of putting the economy on a sustainable footing to meet the challenges of today and tomorrow. We must save and invest more if we are to continue transforming New Zealand into a more dynamic and innovative economy equipped to deal with our economic, environmental and social challenges. Let me start with the economic backdrop to this year's budget. We have experienced the longest economic expansion in 30 years. Average growth rate since 1999 have been over 3%, faster than the average of developed countries, faster than Europe and Japan, the US and UK, and about as fast as Australia. More Kiwis than ever, 2.1 million of us, are in jobs. Unemployment has now been below 4% for the last 3 years. And this is an incredible achievement compared with where we were in the 1990s. But imbalances have built up, and these successes have come with strains on the economy that is running at or above full capacity. Is evidence in the much talked about dollar, reaching a post-float high in April against the US dollar. And of course we're not alone in that. Australia and the UK also have overvalued currencies. It's evident also in the capacity constraints that firms are experiencing. It's evident in inflation, particularly non-tradable inflation, which has now been around 4% or more for the last 3 years. And too much of our recent growth has been demand-led, and that demand has been borrowing-led. And this is leading to an unvirtuous cycle in which inflationary pressures are met by tightening monetary policy, higher interest rates, and therefore upwards pressure on the Kiwi dollar. The longer these imbalances persist, the greater the risk of a potentially uncomfortable sudden correction. It was clear then that Budget 2007 needed to be supportive of this macroeconomic backdrop. From an economic perspective, there are three things that government can do. First, fiscal policy needs to support monetary policy and lean against domestic demand. That means running a budget surplus. Second, the budget should encourage changing the mix of growth away from domestic demand and towards investment and productivity growth. It's investment and productivity that determine the economy's speed limit. We need to put the economy on a sustainable footing so we can achieve a higher sustainable growth rate. Third, if there are structural imbalances in our apparent willingness to increase debt and spend, the budget should ensure incentives are in place to help correct these. Budget 2007 is designed to achieve all three of these objectives. One of the most pervasive imbalances stems from our low saving rate. Saving is critical for both social and economic objectives. Saving helps individuals achieve a better retirement. Saving help creates a stronger economy by deepening capital markets and reducing pressure on inflation and the current account deficit. Saving help creates a fairer society by encouraging a broader distribution of ownership. Our official household saving rate is negative, has been for over a decade, and has been decreasing further in recent years. Alternative measures are less negative, but still show a disturbing downward trend. As this chart shows, our household saving rate also compares poorly with other reasonably low savings countries by international standards. This poor record shows up starkly in our persistent current account deficit, the gap between investment and saving. Our net external indebtedness is around 90% of GDP, amongst the worst in the OECD. It means foreigners are financing too much of our consumption and investment, and in reality we are doing too much consuming, not enough saving and investing. So KiwiSaver is being enhanced. On the 1st of July this year, the KiwiSaver scheme comes into effect. KiwiSaver makes it easy for individuals to contribute 4% or 8% of their gross income to a KiwiSaver account. In the original model, as announced in Budget 2005, The government encouraged participation by offering a $1,000 kickstart annual fee, plus an annual fee subsidy, and a first home deposit subsidy to those who qualify. In August 2006, the government also announced that matching contributions by employers up to 4% would be tax exempt. In this budget, I'm pleased to announce a significant set of enhanced incentives to make it much easier for Kiwis to save. There are three elements. First, the government will provide a tax credit to savers that matches their contributions up to a maximum of $20 per week from the 1st of July 2007. Second, compulsory matching employer contributions will be phased in, starting at 1% from 1st of April 2008, and then rising by a further 1% each year until reaching 4% from 1st of April 2011. And third, to reduce the cost of this to employers, the government will provide employers with a tax credit that reimburses their contributions at a rate of 100% up to $20 per week per employee from the 1st of April 2008. That means, therefore, we've got a top-up tax credit of up to $20 per week for savers, including the self-employed. Those who are self-employed who contribute into KiwiSaver will qualify for the $20 per week. Secondly, compulsory 4% employer contributions will be phased in over 4 years where an employee opts to stay in KiwiSaver or opts into KiwiSaver. Thirdly, the cost of those employer contributions will be offset by tax credits for employers up to $20 per week. In other words, the first $26,000 per year. This applies to complying schemes as well as to KiwiSaver schemes. Let's take some examples. Meg and Jack earn $75,000 between them. They both earn a bit less than the average wage, but their total income is about the average household income. They contribute 4% each. They'll have a first home deposit of $35,500 after 5 years. All this is based upon assumptions of a 2.5% after-tax real rate of return. At 65, they have savings of $390,000, enough for an extra annual income of $20,000 per year. This is an enormous change in their long-term future outlook in terms of their income. Saving is, of course, boosted by employer contributions and tax credits. And this example shows how much can be saved because of the tax credit and the employer contribution. The example here is of an individual who is on what is estimated to be the average full-time wage by the time the scheme comes into full operation on the 1st of April 2011. That is $52,000 a year. By that point, they'll be paying 4% of their income in. Their tax credit is worth a further 2% of their income being paid into their KiwiSaver scheme. Their employer contribution is 4%. So the total amount going in is 10% of their gross income, $5,200 a year. For those on lower incomes, of course, it can equate close to 12% of their total income because the tax credit has been deliberately designed so as to provide a greater proportional benefit to those on very modest incomes to enable them to make the effort to try to save. And remember also that anybody who takes up a new job is joined into KiwiSaver at the point of taking up that new job. They have to make the decision to pull out of KiwiSaver at that stage. Obviously, what we're hoping that this will encourage particularly many modest income earners to make the effort and stay in KiwiSaver rather than withdraw at that point in time. We expect the phasing of the employer contribution to be considered in wage negotiations over the next 4 years. Let's see how the funds build up as a result of these changes. Treasury estimates that, assuming a 50% take-up after 10 years, which is a fairly modest estimate, funds will grow to around $100 billion in today's dollars after 30 years, or around 60% of GDP. I should say that the previous example of $390,000 was also in today's dollars, not in inflated dollars of the future. The overall effect on saving, of course, will be somewhat less, as there will be some switching from existing schemes. But the design of this will be much less than the alternative of providing simply a tax incentive to people in, as part of their contribution into KiwiSaver, which is what most of you, I think, thought the government was going to do from the pre-budget speculation. Kiwi Save is likely to result in a fundamental shift in the New Zealand savings landscape. There's no doubt individuals will be better off, but so will the economy. Australia's $1 trillion of funds under management have deepened their capital markets. But that means companies there have more options and enjoy a lower cost of capital. More Aussie money is financing Aussie expansion there and here. And without a doubt, shifting the balance towards greater saving over consumption reduces demand pressures, takes the heat out of inflation and the current account problems. And that over time should mean less pressure on the exchange rate and structurally low interest rates in the New Zealand economy. The main concern for employers, of course, will be the cost of this. Let's look at a typical company, if there is such a thing, a company with 30 staff, 15 to 35,000 a year, 5 at 45, 5 at 65, at 90. Let's assume that 60% join KiwiSaver, contributing at the 4% rate. By the 1st of April 2011, the total cost of the employer is $17,280, or 1.2% of the total wage bill for that business. The initial cost, of course, next year and the year after, to nearly all employees, will be zero or next to zero, because in year one, $104,000 of income will be actually covered in terms of the employer contributions. In year two, $52,000 of income as the 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% phases in. So there's no short-term effect to employer costs in this proposal at all. And it's worth noting too that all employers, big and small, will therefore have access to an off-the-shelf super scheme that can be efficiently administered through the PAYE system. And in an increasingly competitive international labour market, it's an extra way to attract and retain high-quality staff. It's also, I might say, an extra way to retain New Zealanders in New Zealand because of the nature of the lock-in provisions of KiwiSaver. The second big change in the budget is business tax reform. Much of that has been well signalled. And this is part of the other side of the coin, that is, investing. The business tax reforms amount to a $3.4 billion helping hand for businesses to reinvest more of their profits, undertake the research needed to drive new processes and products that demand a premium overseas, and create a better environment for exporters to expand offshore. It's about making us a more attractive country to invest in for foreign direct investment and about improving our productivity. There are three main elements. The corporate tax rate will be lowered to 30%, and along with that, the standard maximum tax rate for widely held savings vehicles is also lowered to 30%. So there's a further boost to savings. We will introduce our research and development tax credit, which will be 15% of qualifying expenditure, will be volume-based, is estimated to cost some $240 million a year by year two. We are planning to introduce a new international tax regime which will exempt offshore active income from taxation within New Zealand. And for simplicity reasons, any company whose active income or whose passive income is no more than 5% of their total income will be exempt. If they are subject to taxation because of their passive income, only their passive income will be taxed. The grey list will be abolished. Again, this means further simplification. How do we help exporters to expand offshore? Obviously the corporate rate cut and R&D tax credits are part of that, but we are making other changes as well. We're going to, at the same time, help people in terms of this international tax regime change to increase their outbound FDI. Look where we stand at the moment in terms of outbound FDI, proportionate to our GDP. We are right down there amongst the lower groups. We have got to expand our offshore investment if we are to actually retain companies' head offices, design and other functions within New Zealand. Otherwise, what is likely to happen is not what we've seen with Fisher & Paykel, but the whole company moves offshore, which has happened with many growing companies in New Zealand over the last 10 or 15 years. I want to take this opportunity to gently remind people that there's been significant tax relief in recent budgets. In Budget 2004, we introduced Working for Families, the largest poverty reduction measure in a generation. In Budget 2005, we unveiled KiwiSaver and implemented a $1.4 billion business tax package targeting depreciation, fringe benefit and international recruitment. In Budget 2006, we extended Working for Families which I see my opponent now says he will axe. And today a $3.4 billion business tax package and tax breaks for savings. These total some $4.5 billion a year, or around 2.3% of GDP. What we have done is to use the tax system to target the greatest social and economic need, not sweeping personal tax relief that would not have helped lift productivity, but worsened current imbalances. I'd also add, of course, for those who can remember, that the last time the company tax rate was cut was also under a Labor government. Today's announcements build on the Labor government's drive to create world-class infrastructure, a dynamic economy. To recap, we're spending around $2 billion a year at the moment on roading and public transport improvements, seven times more than in 1999. We are dealing with the legacy of an infrastructure deficit. Today's announcements are also about building a sustainable transport network. Electrification in Auckland and other rail improvements are critical to reducing our carbon footprint, helping to take more freight and other passenger traffic off the roads. Saving, investing in infrastructure all drive economic transformation. Supporting that, there are further increases to the Market Development Assistance Program, reflecting the decision not to proceed with tax credits in that area. It's decided this is a more effective way of targeting assistance. We're also refocusing the tertiary sector to ensure it better meets New Zealand's needs for the new investing in a plan approach and expansion of the industry training scheme, and we further invest in research and development assistance directly. Sustainability is a key theme of this budget. We are supporting businesses to develop, seek out opportunities and develop more sustainable business practices and assistance for households to live in energy-efficient homes. I come now to the issue of families young and old. The economic success of the government and the fiscal responsibility shown enables us to continue to make vital social investments. The health sector benefits from an additional $3 billion a year, providing for the final rollout of cheaper doctors' visits for all New Zealanders, support for the aged care sector, investments in child health and other improvements to health services. It builds more schools and provides more teachers. Since 2000, we've hired 4,000 extra teachers. More than $500 million overall, including capital, is being invested in our young people through our drive to build a world-class education system. And with our support agreement with the New Zealand First, we're also increasing New Zealand's superannuation. And last but not least, by any means in this area, thanks to our support agreement with the United Future, we are removing the cap on charitable giving for both individuals and companies. In other words, all giving to registered charities will now qualify for the 33% tax rebate, including from companies into the future. In terms of national identity, of course, the most important element is the boost to official development assistance, outlined already by the Right Honourable Winston Peters. This implements a Labor Party manifesto promise. There's also help for the National Library to provide more digital content and further support for public broadcasting, especially Maori-based broadcasting services across television and radio. Where does this leave the fiscal position? That is still strong. It's a testament to the prudent fiscal management since 1999 that this significant set of policies can be accommodated within our long-term fiscal strategy. We are continuing to run operating surpluses to meet contributions to the New Zealand Superannuation Fund, as shown by the new OBGAL, the operating balance before gains and losses, the International Financial Reporting Standards equivalent of the OBRAC. Most of you don't need to worry about this stuff. And what it means is we're not counting in the operating surplus the gains and losses on things like New Zealand Superannuation Fund and the government's other funds, but we do count actual dividends and interest income from those funds, which is why we exclude New Zealand Superannuation Fund completely, because obviously those earnings are simply ploughed back into the fund and are not available for use. You might note that New Zealand Super Fund will reach $27 billion on current estimates by the 30th of June 2011. We are running a cash surplus this financial year at $1.7 billion, which is somewhat higher, to put it mildly, than we had anticipated up to a few weeks ago, which shows we're taking demand out of the economy. We are moving to cash deficits averaging $1.4 billion over the next 4 years, but as these are less than the contributions into the super fund, Fiscal policy continues to lean against domestic demand. If we look at our long-term fiscal objectives, which is to keep gross sovereign issued debt around about 20% of GDP, we meet that target, which is the top black line, a little above 20% of GDP, but that's largely because of the operations of the Reserve Bank. Net debt continues to drop and then flatten out about this point to run a little above zero, but net debt, including the superfund obviously, continues to drive into positive territory. And we're mindful too of the short-term stimulus. The budget is responsible, it supports monetary policy, it does aim to correct the imbalances. The fiscal impulse measures the change in the fiscal balance from year to year. Because the fiscal balance in cash terms for the current year is much higher than anticipated, therefore the fiscal impulse for the coming year is also higher than anticipated. But if you remove KiwiSaver from the calculation, it is extremely close to what we forecast in the half-year economic update. Over the next 2 years, it is very much what was signalled previously, so there are no surprises for the Reserve Bank in today's budget announcements. So Budget 2007 is, in my view, a bold budget. It is a budget about the long term. It is a budget about saving and investing. And I'd just like to call on Peter Dunn to make a few comments from his perspective as Minister of Revenue.